Mario. Hello.
Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wade.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is a Nintendo Show 64 edition. So what we usually do on the Nintendo 64 is we talk about Nintendo 64 games as they came out, kind of semi-chronologically 21 years ago, which will put us at November of 1996. And we've got a couple games discuss, Wavery 64 as well as Killer Instinct. But I actually wanted to start out, what we do on these retrospective shows is we focus heavily most of the time on home consoles. Mm-hmm. And there is this other really great system that was out at the time, the Game Boy. So I wanted to at least give it a little bit of attention on the retro shows here. There was nothing really super noteworthy.
Why don't we ever talk about Game Boy games?
Mostly because I forget.
Oh.
I mean, because, you know, I can speak for me and you, Wes, here. Like, we kind of got into handheld gaming with Pokemon, which wasn't until 1998.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, you know, they still, you know, have experience with the NES and the Super NES and the N64, but handheld gaming doesn't become like a big part of our gaming experience until much later. But I want to try to rectify that a little bit, because the Game Boy came out in like 89. So,
oh, I owned multiple Game Boys, and yeah. I loved them. I played so many games on Game Boy. I just never bothered to.
I just remember Kirby and Pokemon. That's all I remember. Mm.
Really? I played like the games I really liked playing them a ton was like baseball, of course, the Pokemon games, Mario Land, the DuckTales game was so much fun. There was a Gladius style shooter I really liked. The Ninja Turtle game is fucking amazing.
Hmm.
And that's the thing. Probably why you only review them is like, how do you review a Game Boy game?
Sure.
It's like, it's so simple. Just play it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
One of my favorites was this crazy strategy game called Quix, Q-I-X.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, which is all about controlling space with an enemy in the middle and you're safe when you're on the board.
Was it for kids?
No, it's not to be confused with...
Okay, so Quix is not for kids. Got it.
Yeah. I mean, I think technically you're supposed to be a spaceship. So if a child were on said spaceship, it would...
There's children on spaceships.
But either probably blow up or have its soul infested with the disease of a more intelligent being.
Okay.
So, Quix. It's a great game.
Yeah.
No. I played tons of Game Boy games.
They had a lot of tricks on that. Quix.
Stop it. So I do want to mention a couple of things. First, talking about games for September, rewind a little bit here. The Game Boy Pocket was actually released in North America on September 1st, 1996, which is the first major revision to the Game Boy. And I actually did own a Game Boy prior to having a Game Boy Pocket. I had the big brick Game Boy, but I didn't really have a whole lot of experience playing it because it was a little Game Boy that my parents found for me at a garage sale. And I think once they realized that it required batteries, they were like, well, we'll try to get some batteries for this. And then I rarely ever saw the thing again. So it wasn't until Game Boy Pocket, Game Boy Color out where I actually got more time to actually play these portable games. But another reason why we don't really talk about Game Boy games in a sort of chronological sense is because there's not a whole lot of reliable release date information for this sort of thing. Now, once you get into like the Super Nintendo and the N64, there's pretty reliable sources for release dates.
Yeah.
But like the NES and the Game Boy both, a lot of times for games, you're just kind of getting these vague release months. And games aren't really nailed down to specific days where they came out.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some notable games that came out in 1996. There were actually only a total of 28 games. So in 1996, the Game Boy was 7 years old. Just to kind of give that a little bit of context, the 3DS is about 6 years old
mm-hmm.
right here. And people are really thinking it's getting pretty long in the tooth. So a little system has been out for 7 years at this point.
Well, the market's changed.
Yeah.
Probably a lot since then, you know.
But there were a couple notable games that came out. Kirby's Block Ball. This was of course, a Kirby game. This one was developed by Tosei, published by Nintendo. And this was like this kind of a take on Pong. So, but instead of like just being a little dot, you're bouncing Kirby around with your little paddle. And it's also akin to those Pong type games where there's a set of bricks in the middle of the screen or the top of a screen, and you're just bouncing the ball up top to destroy all the bricks. So you destroy all the bricks, you win. And the sort of twist on it in this case is that there are boss fights where you have a boss running around in the middle of the screen. You have to ricochet Kirby the right way to do damage to it. And there's also a handful of copy abilities, which will give you a couple different skills as you're bouncing around. And this one, actually, you can get on the 3DS Virtual Console. It is available there.
Huh.
It's a short little game. It doesn't take more than a few minutes to get through, which is something that, you know, on the rare occasion we do talk about Game Boy games, that's usually the case where I've talked about a couple of the Kirby games that came out on Game Boy and Mario Land. It doesn't really take all that long to get through these games, which mm-hmm. I think is beneficial because of the really short battery life at the time.
There was a good... I don't think it was this recent Games Done Quick, the summer one, but there was one that I saw where it was literally they did like 6 different games in like an hour and a half.
Because
every game is just so short. Like every game you can just blast through really quick. And it's all on Game Boy, so... They lined them up and had them kind of go in succession, like, with each other.
Yeah, and that's not to say that all games for Game Boy are like that. You do games like Link's Awakening, Super Mario Land 2. Usually games actually have a save feature. They're lengthy enough to require it.
Or the genius of it, one of the best, probably, I think it's the best-selling game of all time, the infinite time crunch of Tetris.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is a game that is just, you know, preys on you.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that Roy Moore stalks children in Alabama.
Topical.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow, all right.
Hey, yeah. Pedophile for Senate.
Oh, God, we're all going to die.
We have conservative listeners, and I'm sure that none of them endorse pedophilia.
I would hope that everyone listens to the show believes that preying on children is wrong. Because that's our stance. Except for Wes.
Wes is just a sympathizer, too. He is not a pedophile himself, of course. He realizes it's horrible. But, you know, he understands people who have to feed their addictions. Did that help? Is that better, Wes?
I hate you guys.
So, there are two Tetris games, speaking of Tetris, that came out in the Game Boy in 1996, Tetris Blast and Tetris Attack. And then Donkey Kong Land 2 also came out in 1996. And actually just... I believe this one was also in September of 96, so in North America, so just like 3 months away from Donkey Kong Country 3 coming out on the Super Nintendo.
Uh-huh.
This comes out like only about 12 months removed from Donkey Kong Country 2 on the Super Nintendo. And, of course, developed by Rare, published by Nintendo, and it is very similar to Donkey Kong Country 2 in the structure, and also the characters you play as Diddy and Dixie. And I think it could easily be confused or just a straight like remake or port, but there are some differences in the level designs and the boss fights, so it's not just strictly a portable version of Country 2. It's got its own flair to it. So, you know, like we mentioned, Game Boy kind of on its way out in 1996, getting a little bit long in the tooth, but
to be
that year
by. Is it the DS that happens next? Or what about Game Boy Color?
Game Boy Color, I think, is like 99.
Uh-huh.
But it's still an iteration on that hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the Game Boy Advance SP is to the Game Boy Advance. And which is what's next up to replace the Game Boy line is the Game Boy Advance. But that's not to 2003. Because the Game Boy itself got a little shot in the arm in 1996 with a game that came out in Japan called Pokemon.
Oh,
and we don't see that game in North America until 1998, but it totally gives the Game Boy a new lease on life. It's the system that 7 years old at the time, and then it continues on with that family of systems until 2003, when it's finally succeeded by something. It lasted the entire decade of the 90s. One of the only things that survived the entirety of the 90s.
Wow. We did.
Yeah, we sure did. Just barely, though.
That's yeah, cool. it was a close one.
Our fourth podcast member, Brian, didn't make it.
No.
Mm.
Really?
How sad.
Yeah.
And I know him?
Well, Carlos killed him.
I know Carlos. He's a murderer?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, God.
Why do you think he went to Kansas?
Oh, of course.
Running from the law.
It's just as good as going to Mexico. Nobody wants to chase you into Kansas.
That's true.
Oh, he's crossed the border. All right, he's gone.
He's
the Kansian's problem.
You enter Kansas. It's like that Pokemon entry. It's like you enter Kansas and you can never find it. You may escape Kansas, you will never get home.
God, that's such a great entry. How fucking weird.
What Pokemon was that one again?
Shinnok.
John remembered.
God.
So,
I hope they keep doing this, by the way. I hope that next one we do, next N64. Go back another year.
Yeah, well, you know, We can take the opportunity to talk about Game Boy games if you have ones that you want to bring up. But we won't be doing an N64 show in December because we're going to skip back to the Super Nintendo show because there are a couple of notable Super Nintendo releases that we want to cover.
True. So, have you played this Pokemon Red?
I have a little bit. I actually played Odyssey on Azul.
Oh, so, very nice. Yeah. You're Spanish. You heard the Spaniards called El Terrible.
Oh, yeah. Alright, so N64 games. We have a couple for this month. Let's start with Wave Race 64. That one came out on November 1st, 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Developed by Nintendo EAD, published by Nintendo. This one was produced by Shigeru Miyamoto and directed by Katsuya Oguchi.
How involved was he in that, though?
We have oversight. Oversight only.
Yeah, his name keeps popping up on all of these things. Well, and we're like, he's just like, yes, water's a thing.
Well, so here's the thing. Like, Nintendo EAD is his development group, his development house. And by the N64 era, he's doing a lot of oversight. Just kind of project management rather than the nuts and the bolts of the design. Like, he was involved in, Mario 64 pretty heavily in the design. And I believe also Star Fox 64. Other than that, a lot of his role is in making sure the project is running smoothly and the creative side is left to the director and sort of advisory. So, for example,
mm-hmm.
Wave Race 64 started out as a speedboat racing game. And
they're like, let's fruit it up a little bit.
let's let the people in wetsuits.
Yes.
But and sometimes
them being a giant fat guy.
Yeah, it sometimes got referred to as F-Zero on water, and you can actually see You can actually see footage of this speedboat racing game in their 1995 Space World sizzle reel, and this is available on YouTube. It's like a 2-minute video, and there's like 10 seconds of wave race with boats.
Yeah.
But Miyamoto, once Miyamoto got eyes on it, he said they needed to make a change to help differentiate it more from the F-Zero series. And it was actually a guy over at Rare, Tim Stamper, who suggested making the change to jet skis. And Miyamoto liked the idea of the maneuverability of jet skis and how it would help show up the realistic water physics they had in the game. So he was like, yep, jet skis, here we go.
First, I'm sure it's the first voice he heard.
What?
And he probably was just sort of like, Miyamoto's wandering around the office, just like, oh, but if it's not speedboats, what is it? So I'm just like, I mean, there's jet skis.
You. You, sir, you're going places.
Drop what you're doing. We need you on the wave race team.
It is kind of interesting that would be a fun story to hear, like how exactly they crossed paths and how Tim Stamper got the idea to him of jet skis. Because Rare, they're a development studio in England.
Yeah.
So, like, how exactly did their paths cross to where, like, you know what that wave race game needs? Jet skis.
Yeah.
And it's also strange because it's not even the first wave race game. The first wave race game was on the Game Boy. It came out in 92 and, of course, had jet skis. So I'd have to assume that this didn't start out by being called Wave Race, or maybe they wanted to take the franchise in a drastically different direction.
But, so drastic.
Yeah. Kind of on a Sea-Doo.
Yeah.
There we go. Anyway, this game was directed by, I already mentioned his name, Katsuya Oguchi. He's the Animal Crossing guy now. He's kind of the creative force behind Animal Crossing.
Mm-hmm. We should kill him.
No, we should not. Stop advocating murder. Jesus Christ.
Jeez.
And then there's also another guy who has a directing credit, Shinya Takahashi.
Ooh.
And he is credited as a producer on a lot of modern games, like a producer credit on Mario Odyssey most recently. But at this point in his career, he's more of an administrator rather than...
So he's the guy that's in the room all the time while someone else does the work?
I kind of...
Is he like the Ben Affleck to Matt Damon?
It's maybe.
Sitting there writing the Google Hunting script, not contributing anything.
Yeah, just kind of hanging out, eating pizza. Which,
did you guys like the Matt Damon cameo in Thor Ragnarok?
I did. It reminds me of the days where Matt Damon just did a bunch of cameos. Like, Matt Damon is fucking Euro Trip for some reason. And Matt Damon...
Who was he in Thor? I'm trying to remember this.
He played Loki in the play.
Yeah, there's that play that's
just randomly. He was only in for like 2 minutes.
Do you know what's crazy? There's this actor that's been going around that looks a bit like him. I thought it was him.
Oh, yeah?
He was in the second season of Fargo. He was in Breaking Bad. He was like the guy at the end. Did you know
Todd?
Yeah, I think maybe his name's Todd.
I guess he kind of looks vaguely like Matt Damon.
I mean, I thought that character was him. I thought that was just him. I didn't realize it was Matt Damon.
Yeah, that was Matt Damon.
Oh. Well, hey, that's cool, I guess.
And then the guy who was Odin in the play is somebody else.
I couldn't place him.
Shit.
I don't know.
Well, he looks drastically different because he's got the beard on and everything.
That's right. So,
fuck, now I gotta look it up.
It doesn't matter. But,
if anything, we can tuck this in as a nightcap to right. This podcast. We can talk about some shitty movies.
That was the implication there. Your eyes lit. Your ears perked up when you heard him say, like, what? How dare you speak ill?
How dare you speak ill? I shall smite thee.
None of your eyes lit up, and then in them I saw that one scene of Chris Hemsworth topless. I know exactly what you're talking
about. Wait, that one scene of him topless?
Every chance they got. They're like, they're saying they're talking about scenes like, all right, can we make him topless in this scene?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
He's fighting a Hulk. It doesn't matter. Just... make him topless.
Try it. All of his family and friends are murdered. He doesn't need a shirt.
Nope, doesn't need it anymore.
Hey,
space movie.
He's got to mop up the blood.
Yeah, space, yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. We'll
takes place in space.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Takahashi, administrative is kind of vague. It's not really super clear about what he does. I kind of like, maybe he's like a human resources kind of guy, yes. Something like that. Like, he's making sure everyone...
He validates the parking passes.
He manages payroll. Anyway, but he credited as director in Wave Race 64. So we talked a little bit about like the water effects and how they like the interaction of the jet skis with the water, and they're super proud of the water in this game. And you know they're pretty cool for such an aged game. But from all of the research and interviews I was able to find on this game, like their primary focus was to get the water right. Like we want to
I mean, it sounds weird, but they're talking about rendering a liquid in a video game is essentially what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, not like having, you know, a bunch of like pixel art showing a waterfall, but literally having that water be something.
Yeah.
Be a real tangible thing. And
how it affect the way you are maneuvering throughout the game.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand that being a really complex hurdle that video games had to accomplish at one point. I mean, now we kind of take, I'm sure we take a lot of this water physics stuff for granted in video games. But, you know, somebody had to render it in a fully 3D environment.
Yeah. And, when you know, while the actual gameplay itself is fine, I think that it's pretty clear that the design was subservient to the effects. You know, for better or worse there.
Clearly for worse.
So, I mean, it is a bit more of a technical racer than they would imply. You know, you think like a wave racer game is kind of like gonna go around in circles, maybe go over some ramps or something. But it does require you to do some things that maybe you wouldn't expect at first. Like they have those little slalom obstacles that you have to go around, and if you miss a certain amount of them, you're done. Mm-hmm. And if you can go off the course because it's water, they don't have it completely closed in. But if you stay off course for more than 5 seconds, you're disqualified. You're done. And they give you a little bit of leeway in there because
do they? Have they seen how this thing handles?
Well, they
give I wouldn't you, call that leeway.
They give you leeway in that you don't have to complete every course to move on to the next one. It's a point system.
True.
So okay. if you do well in like 3 out of 6 races, you'll probably be able to finish.
And that was pretty generous. I mean, it's true. Like, if they give you 7 points for a victory, What did first place went on? Do you remember?
On a normal mode, first place gets you seven points, and to finish normal mode, I think you had to have accumulated just 15 points the entire cup out of six races. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, you could, I guess, not finish three races
and still somehow find your way at the podium.
Yeah. That kind of messed up because there's only four racers, but. You're
picking the one guy that doesn't get put on the pedestal. Yeah. That's kind of sad.
And you didn't finish three races.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I find that.
Well, that tells you that they did at least try to play test this thing, and they realized this is really really hard.
Yeah.
Let's maybe just make this easier.
Let's tone down the requirements.
Yeah. Let's just make 40% a passing grade.
Yeah. There's some other things you can do in the game, like if you got enough speed and you go over a ramp, you can do like these little flips or barrel roll type maneuvers and look fancy doing it. But most of the time, you are fighting the track more than you're actually racing other people. So, it's not so much about coming in first. If you're racing well, you'll probably be close to the front. But the other side of that is if you race perfectly and mess up once, it seems like someone's always going to pass you.
True.
Like there, someone is always right on your tail or ready to overtake you if you bump into anything.
Well, I didn't tell whether or not to give you a good map of what's going on because I wasn't sure if they're literally teleporting your opponents to put them on top of you. Because that's a big complaint about F-Zero from the original F-Zero is that they didn't want to, like, I guess, take the time to track the entire game as it's going. So, like, if it knew who was going to be the second place, it was going to see how good you were.
Yeah.
Right, but it knew who would come in first place if you sucked. And then from there, if you were blasting ahead of the guy every single turn, but then you make one mistake, he's immediately right on your ass.
Mm.
Even though you should have built up this queue of space, because you're constantly just like getting fractions of seconds here and here with every sharp turn that you make while they're being sloppy and lazy.
Yeah.
You know, but then they get ahead of you, and then you catch up, and you take the front again, but no lead is really safe, because the second you make one mistake, they're right on top of you. And I'm wondering if that's what they're doing with Rave Race. Like, if they're just intentionally...
I think it's possible. It's, you know. Nintendo has this funny design philosophy when it comes to racers. Because every racer that I can think of that they make has a sort of, like, rivalry system. Where you know that when you play a Grand Prix, you know, a succession of 4 to 6 races, there are going to be 2 or 3 other racers that are always going to be... Like, if you're coming in first, they're always going to be second and third. And if you drop down to second or third, they're going to be the ones to pass you. And then the rest of the field is just kind of clutter.
Well, you said there's a dynamic element to the jet skis themselves, right? You can manipulate their... Like, yeah. you can change their stats, essentially. You can make them have more horsepower or whatever. You can make them handle a little better.
Mm. And I found that to be essential, because otherwise...
Is there a buoyancy option? That would be great if you could make it so that your thing sinks.
There's a way. You're always like halfway underwater. There is a weight. You can manipulate the weight of your craft and then the tightness of the turns you take. And I found that one to be essential because the first time that we tried to play through this game a couple months ago, I found that any time we were making a turn too sharp, it would throw the rider off of the jet ski.
Mm-hmm.
Which adjusting the tightness of your turn seemed to help out. That's not something that I think happened at all as we were trying to play through.
Yeah.
But your turns are also really dependent on the speed that your craft is going. You can't just like slow down and expect to make sharp turns. It doesn't let you do it.
Yeah, of course. You actually have to have the power of the engine propelling you. It's not just simply aiming one direction or the other. It's not using like flight where you have, you know, the wings that can actually determine how the air is flowing across the plane.
Yeah. And like we were talking about before, the water does affect the way you play. Like the water can get rough. There are weather effects, and that will affect, it'll kind of give you a bounce. And sometimes it'll throw you airborne on your jet ski if the water is getting too rough. But yeah, I mean, you guys have anything else you want to throw about wave racing? It's okay. It's an okay racing.
There's not much to it.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
So it's tough to really do a good review of this game, because there really isn't much to it.
There's a few different modes. You have, like, your regular Grand Prix mode with 3 different difficulties. You have a time trial. You have a versus mode.
Yeah, but there's just slight alterations to the main...
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean.
There's no online play.
No, not for the N64.
I don't know. I feel weird about being so down on this game while at the same time talking up the flying equivalent of this game. So.
Well, see, the thing is, the premise is the primary draw. And if that premise wears pretty thin, like if you just don't like handling a jet ski on water, on rough water, then, you know, you're not going to get much out of it. Whereas, you know, if you enjoy more the premise of flying a hand glider around through rings, then you're going to get a lot more out of that.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, and I see room for improvement, right? Like, I'm wondering why I'm not on a jet ski, or why I'm, like, on, like, actual skis, like, going off of things and doing tricks and, like, having fun that way. I feel like that would be cool. And granted, you said you can do tricks on the jet ski itself.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's not like your standard-ass Sea-Doo. It's one of those standard... Like, yeah. Ones that you actually have to stand up in order to get it to go.
Like a Segway on water.
Yeah, which is just like, oh, by the way, just destroy my kneecaps, by the way. It's, oh, man, or like other boats. It would have been cool if they just stuck with boats. I don't see this being anything like F-Zero, because F-Zero is like a fun, futuristic game that deals with impossible speeds.
You're really ticked Ryan off for that F-Zero comment.
No, it says it. I'm reading it too.
I'm not the only one doing
it. You're the one who brought it up. You're the one who brought it up.
Originally, the game was referred to as F-Zero on water.
Yeah.
There you go. Like, I don't know. I think that it would be better if it was more like F-Zero. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's my problem, is that I cannot say, and I have a copy of it now too. I don't think I've spent more than maybe 2 or 3 hours.
I spent less time than that on my copy.
Yeah.
Well, mostly because I don't have a working N64.
But you stared at it long enough.
I did. It's right next to my bed, really on my nightstand. Those
polygons. Oh, yeah. You boiled it in some Dr. Pepper and then drank it.
Yep. It's now a part of me.
I find that just, like, we might as well make the comparison, because it started out as a pretty direct comparison to F-Zero. I find F-Zero, especially F-Zero X, it's contemporary on that system. I find that to be a much more accessible game.
Yeah, actually, I gotta say, like, from... I've only played it... I haven't got a copy yet, but I played it here. Mm-hmm. And that sold me. F-Zero on the N64, they seem to have done very, very well with it. And again, that is, like, sharp precision handling. It's not like you're worried about trying to manipulate at the same time. Using your propulsion to control your direction. It's sort of like... It deftly handles however you're moving. And in this one... It's really, really tough. Like, going, like the one that you saw me do, where it's sort of like the waves come in really hard.
Yeah.
And I can't turn around, because I'm already going off the course. So in order to turn around, I need to apply more gas. While at the same time, I can't get enough traction with the water to even turn.
Hmm.
So it's self-defeating. There's simply no way to get... I mean, as I can tell, there's no way to get back to the actual track once I've made that one mistake.
Yeah.
And then you leave the track, and what happens? The game's over.
Yeah.
Or that, like you said, I mean, you don't have to, you only have to win.
I mean, the races don't take very long, and there seems to be a lot of ways just to end the race early. You miss the buoys correctly, you 5 strikes, you're out, you going out of bounds, you can't get back, you're out there too long, oh, you're out, that's the end of the race.
What's the advantage of that is, if you really don't want to play that track, just immediately swerve off.
It's like, oh, fuck it. Time
out, like, never mind. Yeah. Throw it in the towel here, move on to the next one.
Yeah, that's true. And I think there's just, you know, they could have found ways to make it a little more about the racing element and not so much the handling element.
Right.
Maybe that's something they want to show you first, and then they give you the other stuff.
Yeah, you're fighting the course. You're fighting the course more than you are the other racers.
I mean, that's the holy trinity this thing is lacking. You know, precision handling and tits and gore. And then you get all those together at once, and you've got a fucking great game.
You got to call it Killer Instinct. Damn it, John!
Well, we're going to get to that. So yeah. Wave Race 64 did get a sequel on the GameCube called Blue Storm, and we already talked about its predecessor. You can get this cart on Amazon for a few bucks. I'm going to pay like $5 for the second copy that I gave you, because I forgot I owned this game.
Hey, if nothing else, it's good for the back pieces that you're going to need if you want to play any Japanese games.
Sure. Yeah, there you go.
Hey, you might as well
pay, good to, pay for good one to take it apart.
Yeah, yeah, just like NFL. Which one did I
grab? Any of the NFLs. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, grab some NFL. I had Madden. No. What's his face?
Tom Brady.
NFL. Probably John Madden.
Yeah, it was Madden. Yeah, I had his face on it.
Yeah, they're actually, when I was looking up the list of Game Boy games that came out in 1996, that, because since John was riffing on it, I saw that one of them that came out was a Madden game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I played a lot of Madden. I want to say 97 was my year for Madden. Maybe
not. On the Game Boy?
On Super Nintendo.
Oh, okay. It'd be fun to go back. Madden game in 97, huh?
That was like one of the old ones I played. They still refer to the special teams as hands. Hands is what they say.
All right.
This is a weird naming convention. Like the fullbacks were sort of a standard formation. It's like now nobody uses fullbacks except, right, you know, the best teams in the NFL.
So, and Wave Race 64 is also available on the Wii and Wii U virtual consoles. So
desperate to make their money back. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's actually, I had the list up here. I think it's number 14 best-selling game.
Oh, yeah?
Really? Yeah, the 14th best-selling. It sold about 3 million copies.
All right. Yeah, it did pretty good for it. Before we move over to Killer Instinct, you guys want to play a game?
Sure, let's play a game.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it. Fine.
We won't like keep score or anything, but I am going to give you a name of an enemy from a video game.
Okay.
And all you got to do is tell me, is it from Quake or is it from Doom?
Tricky. Okay, tricky. I recently watched a video that might help me on this.
Ryan has the chance of doing this. I have no idea what anybody's called in either game.
Neither did I.
So
I can only, off the top of my head, think of one word associated with either series. And it's Phobos, which I believe is the planet that one of them takes place on. And I don't know.
Okay. Let's start. Let's kick this off then.
Okay. About,
Pain Elemental.
I'm going to go with Doom.
Wait, what's my name though? And team what?
Team Dazzler and Team Longshot. Doesn't matter.
Oh, nice. Wait,
who's Dazzler?
Oh, I thought we meant Dota characters.
No, I'm doing X-Men characters.
I'll be Team Dazzler. Oh, she's like the pop star that does the sparkly shit.
She metabolizes sound into light and can use it to blind people or shoot lasers.
And
what the fuck?
Lasers right in your face, buddy. I win.
And right? Long, yeah. No question, Dazzler would kick Longshot's ass.
What does Longshot do?
He is just super lucky.
He's always a loner.
Yeah.
Hangs out by himself.
That sounds about right for me.
Oh.
Okay, so it was a Pain Elemental.
Okay, Pain
Elemental. That's a Doom.
Okay, he's going to go with Doom. You go with whatever you want.
I don't know. It sounds
like... It looks like you're doing WandaVision in your head there.
Well, because they have different, totally different aesthetics, and a Pain Elemental sounds as though it may be more associated with Quake. I'll say Quake.
It is Doom.
Oh, ooh. One for me.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Death Knight.
Oh, that's Quake.
I'll go with Quake. He seems really confident.
It is Quake.
Yeah. All right. 2-1.
Maybe it might be to Quake.
I'm not sure about that.
All right. Enforcer.
I'm going to go with Quake again.
I'll say Doom on that one.
It is Quake.
Oh.
Bam.
You're best in me. 2-1.
3-1. Suck it.
Scrag.
Scrag.
That's Quake again.
It'd be a lot of Quakes in a row if it were a Scrag. I don't know who it would be otherwise though. It makes me think it's the one character. I wish you would tell me who these characters are. I think it's.
I have no idea what the characters are.
I'm gonna say Quake.
It is Quake. Yes.
Okay. I think it's the character with the hooks. There's like this big.
Or two. I haven't missed one yet.
Baron of Hell.
That's a Doom.
I kind of tend to agree.
It is Doom. Yeah. Did we do Hell Knight already?
We did Death Knight.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did Death Knight. How about Hell Knight?
Death Knight was Quake, right? I'll go with Quake.
Hell Knight. I don't know. I guess I'll say Doom to be different.
It is Doom.
Okay.
Damn it!
Mancubus.
Mancubus?
Yeah, Mancubus. Like an incubus or a succubus, but man.
Use it in a sentence.
Wes is dressed like a slimy mancubus.
Mancubus. Again, I'll say Doom. I'm really
I'll go with Doom.
It is Doom.
Okay.
This one's my favorite. Shotgun guy.
Doom. Oh, actually, I'll be different and say Quake.
It is Doom. Well, let's do one more here. We'll do one and close it out.
You had, you're stopping. You have more in your stomach.
I'm 7 to 5.
I have a total of 14 written down here. Shambler. I like this one too.
Oh, I know who it is. I think I'm pretty sure I know who it is.
All right, I'm gonna go with whatever Ryan.
Unreal Tournament.
It's Mike. It was of course Quake. Yes.
It's a zombie that throws shit at you.
I just thought there was a really fun name for an enemy, Shambler.
Give me some other names, though. I'm just curious. Well, I mean,
Rotfish, did we do that one already?
Rotfish. Yeah, that's a little fish, guys, I think. Quake. That's Quake, too, yeah.
That's Quake. Yeah. Ogre Marksman. I thought that was a fun name, too.
That sounds like Quake.
Ogre Marksman. That sounds like Doom, actually, I think.
That one's Quake. And then Cyber Demon.
Cyber Demon.
Doom.
Yeah, probably Doom.
That's Doom.
You're actually pretty good at this.
11 to 8.
you know, rest your cap on that one.
What the hell?
Yeah. Killer Instinct Gold?
We'll get to that. No, but like I think it's actually a really interesting dynamic between Doom and Quake, how they are actually kind of different. Mm-hmm. Where Quake does have like this really dark, gothic, fantasy sort of style. And then
Doom's got
like
something simple.
Space Marine thrown into the ship.
Yep. Here's a guy you can put a bullet in his head.
Yeah,
that's cool. We don't care what he's called. Yeah. Other than the Shambler.
Shambler's from Quake.
Yeah, so.
Now I want to know what the names of some of them are. Like, what's the lizard-looking slug thing that spits acid at you while it levitates?
Carl. This is Carl.
That would be nice.
Carl!
Killer Instinct Gold is a Nintendo 64 game that came out November 25th, 1986. So almost 21 days ago. God, fuck me. 21 years ago.
Today.
Nearly.
Oh, I almost spit out my soda there.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is a spit
almost
tank.
Almost 21 days
way
ago.
Way back 21 days ago.
Because, I mean, this came out 21 days ago, so I had to put down my Mario Odyssey and play Killer Instinct Gold.
This one developed by Rare and published by Nintendo. And the Killer Instinct series began as Rare's take on Street Fighter.
On their desire to make more money.
Well, Rare made so many games back in the day. A lot of the criticisms, or and I don't mean that as like the negatives about the game, just a lot of like the analyses that I read about this game kind of compares it more to a Mortal Kombat. And after playing it for a few minutes, I'm not sure that I agree with that.
I tend to agree.
You do have, well, you do have things like, you all have like your quick, medium, and fierce punches, but I didn't get the impression that all of the, like, the punches and kicks were the same for every character, which is kind of what we railed on Mortal Kombat about. Just how the mechanics of the game were similar no matter what characters you were playing.
My take on it would be more like, the way that Street Fighter is animated is in such a way that it feels like you're watching an anime or animated series fight scene. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you watch Mortal Kombat or this game, it's sort of like you get locked into animations and they change so fast you don't even know what just happened.
Okay.
It's sort of like...
Yeah, I can understand that.
It happens so quick and the combos are expected to be delivered in a certain way. But in Street Fighter, they always kind of made it seem like it was more fluid.
Hmm.
Like it was, it seems like with Street Fighter, there was more thinking involved, like getting the strategy going and everything like that, where Mortal Kombat and Killer Instinct here just seems a lot more of, alright, I'll press these three buttons and maybe this is going to work.
Once you get deeper into the minutia of Killer Instinct, I think there's a bit more depth there than there is.
Yeah, I was surprised. Like I don't play a lot of fighting games, and I never played all these older ones either, especially Street Fighter, but that's a lot of buttons for different like punches and kicks.
Yeah,
that's a lot going on.
Yeah, this game is using like every button on the N64 controller except for like the shoulder buttons, so it's using all of your C buttons and your A and your B, and I actually prefer using the D-pad to the analog stick, even though they do have mechanics that require like rolls.
I mean, there's a lot going on here because there's all those buttons going on, and then there's different attacks based on if you're in the air, if you're low, and then they have so many variation things on so much. There's just a lot going on with this.
And it does have like a rather robust like little training sequence where it'll teach you the button combinations to pull off special moves, and even teach you things like combo breakers, which are the thing in this game that, you know, can be used against me, but I have no idea how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and they're now kind of a staple to fighting games. Parries, counters, combo breakers, that kind of shit. You know, it's sort of an expected feature at this point.
So this game, it was in development under a different moniker, which I failed to write down, escapes me, a brutal fighter or something like that. It had a different name.
Yeah.
But then there's a guy who was new to Nintendo at the time. His name was Ken Lobb. And he visited the Rare to see the development of this game. And he was the guy who actually pitched mechanics, things like auto doubles and linkers to the development team. And they adopted these mechanics into the game. And this game does, just to continue the Mortal Kombat comparison, it does have pretty blatant Mortal Kombat mechanics, such as finishing moves, which are, of course, called fatalities.
Which the only one that you only saw the one.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was one. There was one pretty graphic death. But again, they don't match the fatalities of like Mortal Kombat, which are like, let's quickly convert this human being into burger.
Right.
compared to just sort of like, oh, there's a big splash of blood and they're not on the screen anymore.
Well, the one robot dude, the Colossus / Wolverine / Cyclops character.
Right.
Like hit a button on his wrist and a laser beam came down from the sky and melted you. Like, that's pretty funny. That was pretty intense.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing with Mortal Kombat, the fatalities, the things that we kind of railed about Mortal Kombat against, like, this is the most complex thing, like, that required the most thought, and you do it after the fight's over.
Yeah.
And I think the difference with Killer Instinct is that there is, like, you do have to think about what you're doing throughout the rest of the battle. It's not just kind of beat the shit out of the other guy, then do the really awesome thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't give you that space to make it happen. It's just sort of like, if you finish it using this powerful move, then it will happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Killer Instinct 1 was first released as an arcade game published by Rare in Midway. Nintendo did the marketing for the arcade release. And the cabinet was unique at the time because it was the first arcade machine to actually have a hard drive to accommodate its high-end graphics. About 17,000 of those arcade machines were produced. And that first Killer Instinct game was initially planned for release on Nintendo's home console, called the Ultra 64 at the time. Mm-hmm. But the delay of the console's release hindered the game's development, and ultimately the development resources were shifted to the Super Nintendo and the Game Boy, which both got versions of Killer Instinct 1. So instead, Rare made a version of Killer Instinct 2 for the Nintendo 64. And it was originally planned for release only on the console, but then made a jump to arcades after the big success of the first one in arcades. So the follow-up, Killer Instinct 2, featured more detailed, diverse 3D backgrounds and allowed for limited interaction with those backgrounds. You just see them in Killer Instinct Gold and N64, there's like some destructible things, like some trash cans. Or like there's a wall that you could break down and access a different area of the fighting stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it has like some dynamic camera things going on in some of the stages as well. Like,
yeah, I noticed that too. Sort of like, you would think that the camera slides back and forth, of course, but then it goes to the spot where it's like, oh, there's technically a wall there. What's it going to do? And just like, the camera just jumps up, you know, 30 feet and looks down on the fight.
Yeah.
Without really sacrificing anyone's view of the fight too. So it's,
I'm sure that was super impressive at the time.
Yeah.
So while Killer Instinct 2 is pretty mechanically faithful to Killer Instinct 1, it did introduce some new elements like ultra breakers and super limiters, and I have no idea what those are.
Yeah. But they have ultra and super in them, so they must be good.
Yeah, they must be a whole lot better.
Yeah.
And it's also there's some sort of like rock, paper, scissor elements to special moves, which I guess kind of determines what special moves have priority over the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So like many fighting games, like we've already mentioned, has a quick, medium, and fierce punch and kick, so it's using all those buttons. We already talked about using the D-pad. Like, did either of you guys use the analog stick at all?
No.
No. I mean, most people that play like professionally, of course, they have their own arcade style setups, and in general, you're supposed you are expected to prefer a stick to the D-pad or whatever. But, you know,
but I think like on those like arcade fighting pads for a lot of fighting games, I don't think they're giving you an analog stick. I think it's a digital joystick, like in an arcade.
Yeah.
So it just makes much more sense for a fighting game like this. Like I went through the training mode. And for with a couple characters, and it will tell you like, hey, do this roll, and then this button combination to pull off this special move, and then it will show you on like a little a scrolling ticker like the actual inputs you're doing, so you can see what you're doing wrong.
Oh, that's really convenient.
Yeah, and I kept on trying to use the stick to do the rolls, and the inputs were so messed up because you know it's not like a pure analog stick, but it does have more stop points than like a digital pad, so. If you kind of get yourself stuck in between something, you're not going to be pulling off the directions that you want.
Mm-hmm.
It also uses like some back, forward, back inputs and holds to input special moves. So.
Well, they do need like a combo training for you. Do they give you like basic combos to work with in it? Where they're sort of like, you know, it's like
pick a character, we're going to make you good with them.
You pick a character.
Short punch, short kick, medium kick, you know, fierce kick. Gives you a basic standard combo. And then that chains into your fucking blade uppercut or whatever.
I didn't get much further past the introduction of the specials. But, you know, we can pop it in later and take a look. Because I'm sure they got to have something like that to kind of teach you how to put combos together.
But if we do it later, then what's the point?
For our own benefit.
Yeah.
Knowledge is its own reward,
that's
sir.
Cheesy.
Yeah, it is also kind of annoying for them to have these complex combos if they can't just show them to you. Because that's one of those things that's always been kind of annoying for all fighters is when it's like, oh, I want to get good at that. That was a cool combo. How can I learn how to do that? And it's like, oh, I got to go to the interwebs.
Yeah, there's sort of like esoteric nature to fighters where there's a barrier of entry and they don't make it easy for players to cross that barrier.
Yeah, no, like when I was a kid, I remember I would literally print out from a computer...
Yeah.
Combos for Marvel vs. Capcom 2, take them to my game and then play them trying to like memorize these gorgeous combos that made me feel like a fucking god when I would pull them off.
I would print out how to get summons and ultimate weapons in Final Fantasy games and RPGs.
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I was going through some of my old stuff months ago, but I grabbed one of my old God, what was that magazine?
It
was
Nintendo Power.
No, it wasn't
Game Informer.
MapQuest. Oh.
I forget what it was.
Electronic Gaming.
I was going through that. I flipped through and I pulled them out. And there was just sheets of Final Fantasy 7 and 9.
Oh, that's awesome.
Help. And I'm like, oh my god.
Why did I waste this paper? There
was an 8-1. I was like, why did I waste my time? Like,
why did I think the internet would not exist one day? I didn't need this. I don't know about you guys, but for me, fighting games are virtually inscrutable. Like, you can explain the mechanics to me, but when I'm actually in it, my fingers will turn all downsy and forget. Like, I won't know what the fuck I'm doing. What?
Nothing.
That's the most offensive thing we've said today?
Nothing.
That's the most... Okay, fine.
That's the line. There it is. Good job. Oh.
So, you know, you do have to... not only react, but also predict what your opponent is going to be doing in order to block correctly and pull off these combo breakers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never commit any sort of enemy maneuvers to memory. Like, even when I'm playing Smash Brothers, I pick one character and I react to what everyone else is doing. I'm not like,
okay,
he's Mario, so he's probably going to try to set me up like
that.
You're selling yourself short.
He plays Smash Brothers like the computer in the Killer Instinct does.
Yeah.
They sit in the one corner and just spam range stuff to get it close.
Untrue.
Then knocks you away and spams range stuff.
Factually incorrect. Factually incorrect, sir.
Sir.
I mean, I think that, again, you're selling yourself short on that because you don't realize that you're doing a lot of deeper stuff when you play these games.
Hmm.
You are really processing strategy and learning tactics and thinking of priorities.
Yeah, you beat Jago.
Yeah, but I beat
Ryan
him the same...
Ryan could beat Jago.
I beat him the same way I try to beat every character. I try to jump in there because it seems to be the quickest way to enter the fray and just hope my quick attacks land so I can pull off a stronger one.
Mm-hmm.
I really just kind of stumbled into a victory.
Well, so let's start from there. That's actually a really good place to approach any fighting game. Like, I'm not, I don't play Killer Instinct much, but I played a lot of Street Fighter 2, and I played Mortal Kombat, and I played Marvel vs. Capcom. I played all these other 2D fighters, so it's sort of like, it's its own language. You can get good at it by just simply looking at a few fundamental mechanics, such as, is my opponent being aggressive? Are they charging for me? Do they want to stay away? Are they trying to, quote-unquote, zone me? Think of Ryu. When Ryu sits back and just does nothing but fireballs, he doesn't want to get into the fray with you. He's zoning you. It's just what they call it. If it's someone that you would call like a jungler, someone that wants to be on top of you the entire fight, wants to be close to you, and is also doing the single most important thing in any fighting game at this point, I think, is cross-ups. Crossovers. Simply jumping across your opponent, forcing them to face one way to facing the other way, totally disrupts everything they're doing. If they're charging things, they can no longer charge them. They don't know if you are going to perform an aerial attack or you're going to land and do a down attack. So now they have to worry about where they are going to guard. This is true for any fighting game. You keep that in your mind, you will be instantly better. It's like memorizing the two-letter word list and playing Scrabble. You are instantly going to be better at it with having not played a single game.
I feel like Ryan should be like standing in front of us with a chalkboard. Like, listen, lesson one. Jump over them. Lesson two.
Yeah, know how your opponent attacks and wants to approach you. For example, when we were playing, that was something that I kept doing. Don't always feel like you have to move forward or backward. Sometimes just holding your position is the correct thing to do. Jumping vertically, and all of these attacks have priorities. That's the thing, is that the game developers know what they're doing, where they're like, this chick's fierce air kick, while longer, is not going to be as good as this guy's air medium punch. He'll take priority when the two meet head to head. And these are things that you're not thinking about really at a snap judgment when they happen, but you know, when you get in the air, you know your moves and what has priority, so you're just kind of rolling the dice and hoping that your opponent does well. And maybe they don't. Maybe they don't use that move that has priority over you, but maybe they do and they knock you back. And then you're forced to reset the fight from there. Like, and again, this is all just fundamental 2D fighter shit if you play a lot of these. You know, I'm sure it's the same way when you guys are playing an RPG, and it's like, oh, he's charging up this bar. It's probably going to be really useful. It's like, oh, but maybe I can chain it together with this other thing these people do. And it's like, yeah, of course, it's what the game wants you to do.
Smash Brothers priority.
And I think the difference, like with an RPG or even like a platformer or an action game, is they ease you into it. Like you're not gonna, because when we're playing Killer Instinct, like, you know, the fights were getting a little bit tougher as you go, or when you select a different difficulty level. But with a game,
we almost beat the game on normal.
Yeah,
just now.
Yeah,
like almost playing it for 30 minutes.
Fucking Gargoyle, though. God damn it!
It wasn't that. Give me. If you gave me 10 cracks at it, I'm sure I'd win a couple of times.
Okay.
Like the game does not seem that tough. Like I'm sure right, if I were to
game, every time you die, we take a shot.
But outside of the that's the difference between like a fighting game and a lot of other traditional genres that you'd see on a Super Nintendo or an N64, it doesn't take it easy on you in the beginning. Even playing like very easy, like your opponent is on top of you right away. Like the main difference it seemed between like the easiest difficulty mode and normal is they're using blocks more and probably stringing together some nastier combos. But it's not like they were just standing there letting you experiment and figuring out what you can do. That's why they're not going to do that.
But you guys should. I mean, I don't think you guys really do this much at all. And I know I do it. I did it a couple times where I was like, I find a move that connects and I do it again. And I do it again. And I do it again. And I make them stop me before I do something else. And people call that cheesy. But that's... make the AI prove it can beat you if I'm simply doing a down fierce and I'm putting blades in your face.
Like, kind of like Wes, and when he can't get by a fucking bomb in Smash Brothers, just no. I'll keep doing it as long as it keeps hitting you.
Again, yeah. Make your opponent stop you. Everything has a counter. Everything has a counter.
You're really proud of yourself with those bombs, aren't you? You're so proud of yourself. You're just sitting there just jacking it so hard. Look at these bombs I'm throwing.
I don't even need two hands to do this. I'll just keep on chucking bombs at you.
That is nice about him, though, how he can basically, like, charge a bomb, throw it while you sling an arrow, and then throw your boomerang.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, why not? Why not just harass the hell out of your opponent?
It's not doing much damage, but it really pisses them off.
That's the zoner's dream. You're playing it like a zoner.
Yeah.
Like, you're just sitting there blasting fireballs, and you're telling your opponent, find a way to get near me to stop me from doing this. And when you do, I got an uppercut ready for you, because you're going to try and jump in on this. and then this is how you're going to lose because I'm playing a turtling defense or whatever.
Yeah,
and that's find the strategy that works for you. I bet you if you could just take the time to learn a few projectiles in this game, you would probably improve dramatically.
There was one fighting game on the Wii, that Tatsunoko versus Capcom game.
Ooh, that game was for real. I liked that one a lot.
I liked that one too because I found a character. Her name was Saki, and she had a big, huge gun, and she was pretty good at just keeping the enemy on the other side of the screen.
Yeah.
And when they were able to get by my gun, I was able to just toss a grenade on the ground and knock them back.
Yeah.
So that was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
You son of a bitch.
They should have tried to stop me.
And that's, I'm still playing Street Fighter 2 to this day, and I still feel like I'm making progress with how I play the game. Mm. Like, you know, it's that fucking quote from Jack Nicklaus or whatever. He's like, why do you still play on the senior tour? He's like, because I think I'm getting better. And it's like, oh, wow, that's a dedication to craft. And it's the same way for me, where it's like, as a kid, I never liked Vega. I always hated Vega, and I realized it was because I wasn't good enough to play Vega. And now he's my main. He's like my go-to guy, because I am now obsessed with the idea of cross-ups and controlling opponents and just suffocating them, as opposed to being Ryu, who was my old guy, where I was just simply just throwing out fireballs and making them jump at me. And I'm like, oh, there you go. Here, enjoy your uppercut, asshole. And you find a better... You find yourself within the characters as you play them. This is really pretentious. The characters you play and the way you play them define you as a person. It's like playing a chess match for someone, like your RPG games, versus playing a tennis match for someone, which is your fighter games. It's like they can run down your throat if they want to, if they're just playing it right. Or you can sit there and play the strategic game of positioning and all of this stuff. I don't know. Part of me likes the simplicity of a fighter versus an RPG game.
Hmm.
I love it, and I also like the immediate, direct conflict of it that you have with... Again, we didn't play each other with this, but when you do play each other, it's... Normally, when I play people in these games, I run over them. I beat them up pretty bad. But I love it when I have two friends that are equally matched, and they play each other. Because I see the competitive spirit come out in them.
I don't know about equally matched. John hasn't beaten me yet.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like I well when we play.
Yeah,
Brawl.
Get wrecked, son. Yeah, get wrecked.
But I mean, we might as well be playing someone with feet hands. It doesn't matter.
We established your dance.
Great, you beat the guy in a wheelchair in a dunking contest. It's amazing.
Yeah, so that's I really think it's great because again, you watch people play and you can watch you can see the wheels turn in their mind as they're making the decisions they make, and it's great. Like I don't sit there and think like, oh, what is this art? Well, like if they're playing an RPG, it's like, oh, they only got 145 of 200 mana. How are they going to apply this correctly over the next 6 skills they have?
First of all, the only thing going through my head is like the bomb on battlefield as I'm playing this fight. I don't know what I'm doing. Do 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 do.
Yeah.
And second of all, like the thing I like about RPGs, I might as well take this tangent. Is that what a really good RPG, what it does is when it presents you with a major fight, it's a puzzle to solve. And some RPGs allow you to go off and just buff, like grind up to the point where you're just overpowering. But the really good ones will say, no, this is the fight, and you got to figure out how to wait to get, no matter what you've done in the game up to this point, you are equipped to beat this fight, figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, like we talk about in Pokemon, during the Pokemon show, sometimes it just involves buffing yourself up until you become this overpowering force. And sometimes it's using specific skills in order to gain advantage over the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But no matter what it is, I can take my time. I don't have to worry about big suppressed fireballs.
Yeah, I mean, that's another good point, is that you actually have time to reflect upon your decisions
mm-hmm.
that you're about to make. It's not just immediate... quick fight or flight response.
Right, whereas in Killer Instinct, if I jump in and they immediately hit me like a 7-8 combo, like I got all the time in the world to think about what I did wrong there.
Yeah.
But I can't fix it.
And that's something I think... And by the way, the game actually... even though it is in some ways like Mortal Kombat, give the game credit, I feel like it's a lot more controlled and coordinated. Your character and your movements, they make a lot more sense. They don't all jump and kick the same... You know, that kind of stuff.
And to the game's credit, you really can't, even on the easiest difficulty mode, you can't just go in there and mash some buttons and expect to win. Like, you will lose.
Yeah.
If you just kind of flail about wildly.
It's a fundamental game. Like, fighting, these kind of 2D fighters are, like, fundamental methods of ways to make a video game. I'm surprised you guys don't get down on these more. Hmm. They're fun. I say to a silent room.
I can appreciate them for what they are. I'm sure, like, playing a pipe organ is fun for people who are good at it, too.
Yeah.
But it's going to sound like noise when I do it.
I play a different kind of fighter game. And that's the game John gives me a hard time about.
God, he's talking about Skyrim again.
Not Reno, Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Because the PvP in Dark Souls is fucking intense.
Dark Souls is Tekken with RPG.
Yeah, it's really intense.
Yeah, it's like...
that kind of makes sense, because it's Namco who publishes that game.
Yeah, well, I noticed from... Not just, like, from playing it a little bit myself and you talking about it all the time, but seeing other people play it, it's very much just like this...
It's incredibly fast-paced, and there's a lot of different strategies and everything you can do in just a simple little fight. And this timing is very critical. And, like, there's parries and everything in that game, and parries are painful when they happen.
Because
the second you get a parry off, you get a critical attack off, and it just deals tons amounts of damage.
Dark Souls isn't on the N64, though.
There's just so much going on with it. It's great.
Not on the N64.
Yet.
One day.
It could, in theory, happen.
So you can get a cart for Killer Instinct Gold, which I failed to mention. Killer Instinct Gold is mostly based on Killer Instinct 2, but it does have some elements, I think mostly characters, that also get brought up in Killer Instinct 1.
These aren't bad reviews, by the way, but they're pretty middling. I'm seeing a lot of 6 out of 10s, 62%, 3 out of 5, 27 out of 40.
That's Famitsu. It's got to be Famitsu then.
Yeah.
27. What Famitsu does is it has 4 people review a game on a 1 to 10 scale and then gives the aggregate of. So that's why it's out of 40.
That's actually weird.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Instead of one, you know.
Yeah, you get to 4 people's opinion. And usually they're pretty aligned.
Yeah.
It's really rare that you see, like, one person say 10 out of 10. Yeah. And the other person's like, nah, 4 out of 10. I think that...
If you're going to get down on some 2D fighters, I would not recommend starting with this guy. But
what? If all you have access to is an N64 and you're playing games chronologically, this is your option. You get your one option at this point.
Well, you know, hey, there's a couple things I feel like we did not talk about. Graphically? Yep. What do you think?
That looks alright.
Yeah, looks pretty good.
I mean, that front screen with the dude's hair was flowing in the wind, it was fantastic.
Two things, okay. for the graphics for the time, they look pretty detailed, they look good.
Yeah.
Also, it's also a blessing and a curse. Your characters stick out very well. You can clearly see how both characters are moving and what they're performing, and they don't get muddied with the backgrounds at all. Good thing. Bad thing... They don't blend in with the background at all. Mm-hmm. They stick out. It's very static.
They're basically fighting on a green screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good
point. It's especially evident when that dynamic camera kicks in and it takes a different angle, because some, like, your characters will sometimes shrink down to kind of scale with the camera zooming out, but they don't, like, change up their position. They're still, like, these 3D pre-rendered characters.
There's some environment interactions. Like, at one point, you kick somebody through a wall, and at one of them had a fatality where they uppercut you and you plummeted off a bridge into oblivion. That was fantastic.
But it looked really terrible as you're falling into oblivion.
You're like, this is happening. Okay.
He just got punched off a bridge.
Holy hell.
Round 2.
It's worse than Mortal Kombat, but you can't uppercut it off a bridge and land on spikes.
Yeah. And actually, we didn't really talk about... It doesn't pause in between rounds. Like, if you get your health taken down and you lose that life, it refills, and round 2 essentially begins, and player 1 continues, the player who won that round continues with the health that they already had.
And, well, I mean, they do a little thing where you have the two bars. You have to knock out 2 bars health of your opponent to win the match. But after you knock out the first one, they will reset your positioning to...
Yeah.
They will give you that little reset. Like, all right, step away. Let's get this fight going. But I don't like the rhythm and how they start, because we're so used to a lot of games going ready, set. Mm-hmm. And now it's just...
They don't say go.
Ready, and then they just start fighting. And it's just...
They just get hit in the face with a fireball immediately.
Like, shit.
Oh, that was obnoxious, too. Like, imagine someone that was genuinely good, dedicated dozens of hours to playing this game, to be that one, like... rock guy that shot laser beams. Like, he was just the most annoying motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just from pretty much anywhere on screen. And by the way, there is a massive gap that can occur.
Funglor, I think was his name.
Yeah.
No, Glite, Glee.
Can we even talk about the characters yet?
No, not really.
We didn't even talk about the characters at all, which is weird, because, like,
we kind of glossed over.
If we were talking about Street Fighter, it would be like, you know.
And they are very different, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't have a list of their names pulled up. We can try to go from memory here, but, you know.
There was the three chicks.
That's an easy place to start there.
There's the three chicks. One of them had gravity-defying boobs. Like, they just didn't make any sense.
They all had really bad back problems.
Yeah, they had that.
It's sort of like, yeah, they had these giant, like, catchers. Like, what are the chest plates they wear?
I think it was just chest piece, yeah.
That thing. It's sort of like it sticks out on top of them. They don't look like they're actually humans.
Hmm.
But, yeah, they definitely took the time to craft some big tits on them.
Yep.
And made sure that they were not...
It's a high priority. Like the water in Wave Race, they really wanted to get this right.
They wanted to get the boobs just... Mm-hmm. Which is why they put the nipples on one of them on the top of the boob. So there's, like, there's like pointy right in the top of the boob. Like, it didn't make any sense. Yeah, it was really weird.
Okay.
But what it does tell you is that...
Leave it to Wes to find everything weird about boobs.
So the three of them seem to have...
masturbating in the corner. Guys, keep playing that character.
Keep playing. Stop. Turn into a panther again.
Come on, guys. So one of them turned into a panther.
The three of them play similarly in that they don't have much range. They seem to have very little range, and they're fast at attacking.
Hmm.
From the moves that I stumbled across with them... The one in the green seemed to have a pretty functional projectile.
Was she like the one in the green shorts?
Yeah, the green outfit that had the two arm weapons.
Okay, not the knives.
It was kind of opposite. Like, she had
green Psylocke.
She had like a shirt on and no pants, opposed to the girl with the knives who had pants and no shirt.
Right.
The blonde one?
Yeah.
Yeah, the blonde.
Her thing was more like a, you know, jungler, cage fighter kind of thing, where she's got her blades. I did not see a single projectile out of her.
No.
She's got a sweeping arc of a jump, so she can get around the map easily. And it's not just that there's these three women. You know, you have all these other characters. You have Jago, who seems to be sort of like the fucking Ryu of the series. Mm. He's got a pretty standard projectile and a sword. He just kind of looks like he's not weird. Just looks like a dude, big... fucking sword.
And then you had the dude that looks like Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah. He's a barbarian character.
Yeah, with a big old snake tattoo on his chest.
And it seems like he's super slow, in spite of him. And that's also sort of a Tekken thing, where it's like...
But really ranged.
Yeah. He has a long... Yeah, that sword's got a long range to it, but he doesn't do a lot of jump attacks. He would here and there, but he's definitely supposed to keep you at arm's length.
Oh, the wolf guy who is Blanka incarnate. The guy looks and plays like Blanka.
Yep.
So just very much in your face.
He had a howl, impressive, which made me think maybe he has a howl and it worked the same way as that gargoyle's scream. Like, I
don't know.
That would have been interesting. Because he does have like a weird howl thing he did.
Could be. Or could be like a buff, perhaps. But there's also that skeleton character, Spinal.
Yeah.
Where he has some projectile attacks, or like shoots some projectiles out of his shield, but in order to do that, you have to charge it up first. You have to like do a quarter circle back roll, and then you'll be able to like do a quarter circle front roll and shoot the big projectile out of his shield. So maybe it's like a charge up where you have to do the howl before you do something else.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And then you have the token black guy.
The boxer, yeah, of course, because, you know, when Mike Tyson was alive at the time.
He still is. Still
no, they tell you that. But I'm pretty sure he is a android that's, you know, built to look like him.
Oh, or it's like his brother.
That
like
could be.
Ted Tyson.
Okay. I was going to say Todd. It's Todd Tyson. But yes, Ted Tyson is out there.
He's like the Charlie Murphy to the boxer.
You want in your heart and wanting to eat your children. Yep. He has the best quotes, man. That guy's the best fucking quotes ever.
any other characters pop out? We talked about Mr. Skeleton.
There was the mud dude.
The what guy?
Oh, I didn't like him.
Glacian?
Glacier?
Glaceon.
Glaceon.
Ice type.
He essentially was.
Massive special defense.
Yeah, he was weird because he like had like this weird like almost teleport thing where you like sunk into the ground and pop back up.
You turn into a puddle and came back up.
But that's probably perfect if you're dealing with, again, someone wanting to hit you in the face with a bunch of fireballs or projectiles. You can just, rather than even exposing yourself with a jump, you just dash through them. And that's a cool thing. The game actually has a dash mechanic. So,
I couldn't really find it. Is it a 4-4?
Just double tap. Double tap any direction, we'll dash you.
Weird. All right. I think we're getting to the end here.
We've gone a little bit longer than we should.
You can get a cart for Killer Instinct Gold for the N64 on Amazon for about $15, and is what I paid for it.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. It's not available on any sort of virtual console, but it is available on the Xbox One Rare Replay Disc, which was a retail disc that they put out. It had like 30 games developed by Rare on it.
And
this was one of them on there. Yeah. It's pretty cool. But that is going to bring this show to a close. Next up is the official show.
Cool. Official show right before Christmas, so we...
Well, that's not... The before official show is in December. For the Christmas one.
Well, yeah, but it's like the one right before like the... Where the season holiday gets nuts.
I suppose.
And see what they're going to do.
I guess.
All right.
I mean...
So what are the big releases?
I don't know. I'm just talking out of my ass here.
Well, there are a bunch of big releases this month that we probably won't get too deep into any of them because I didn't get any of them. Like Doom and Skyrim. Why is he talking about Skyrim again if you want?
You're gone.
But like, and then Resident Evil Revelations 2 is one I'm looking forward to. That's coming out in a few days.
Pokemon Ultra Sun and Moon came out.
Yeah, Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. I did not get it.
It already came out.
Friday.
Yeah. And again, which I don't know where Target kept doing it, but the Skyrim stuff and... No, we were good about the Pokemon, but I kept finding the Skyrim stuff on the floor early. I'm like, this comes out Friday. I'm just going to take this.
Oh, weird.
But I will say this, we're selling a lot more Switches than anything else game-wise.
Good.
Very cool.
Good.
A lot of Mario Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Good. Perfect.
I feel like the internet is in an uproar right now in terms of, not that as though the internet's opinion matters on anything. Fuck all of them.
Everyone on the internet.
There's like 5 billion of them and they can all just suck a dick. No, but like I've noticed there's been this big backlash with a lot of...
You know, we're doing a podcast that goes on the internet.
Right? What?
No, I just keep this for us. This is why I don't post these.
Maybe that's why people give me weird looks when I tell them about the podcast.
they can't find it.
Wes, I don't know where it went. All right, continue your thought. I'm sorry.
We're being recorded. Oh, God.
Continue your thoughts.
I've noticed that people are wising up to a lot of the shitty ways that game developers take advantage of consumers.
Oh, dear God, the whole Battlefront 2 ordeal?
Well, let's actually put a pin in that, because maybe we'll bring that up in the official show, because, you know, we're not going to get too deep into new releases, so we'll have something to talk about there.
Yeah, shut up, Wes.
Oh, my God.
Put a pin in it.
I have thoughts.
Put a pin in my dick? No!
Yeah, right now, in front of everybody.
Because I'm sure we all have thoughts on that, because, yeah.
Yeah,
there's dick?
There's some shit. God, loot boxes.
put it away. God damn it. Nobody asked for that.
Ugh. Why is it so skinny and floppy?
Oh, jeez.
Give it a minute.
It's like a pencil. Anyway. So, the other release that I was looking forward to this month was Tiny Metal, and that got delayed until December, which is a bummer. It's like an Advance Wars clone for the Switch.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Yeah, you're super excited about that.
I'm still super excited. Just a little disappointed that it won't be this month. But, and then we'll start the whole process over next month with the Pokemon show. I don't know, what should we talk about?
Probably Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon.
Are you even playing it?
No, I haven't. You just told me it came out.
Literally, the only reason why I thought about buying that game was to give us something to talk about on the Poco Show. That's the only reason why I thought about buying that game.
Save your money for a Switch. Come on.
Maybe I could give you the Pokemon SATs. Just ask you like 50 questions about Pokemon.
Maybe do a ranking or something.
Hands a piece of paper in the middle of it. All right, write an essay regarding...
There we go. That could be a fun topic if we could find a good way to rank some shit.
Yeah. We don't even have to rank a type. You know, we find something else to rank. Yeah. Unless you really want to rank a type. So, anyway, we're rambling here, so let's bring this to a close. Till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.